It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and joining us this morning from Harvell & Collins, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Morning, Ben.
All right, where do we pick up here today?
Well, you know, we were talking last week about homeowners associations, Ben. Mm-hmm. You know, we get so many questions at Harvell & Collins about, you know, the intricacies of ownership, you know, within a subdivision, a homeowners association.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we represent several associations, so a lot of times we get questions from the, you know, actual board of directors about how to deal with a particular situation regarding a property owner or something, you know,
right,
in the subdivision. And then on the other hand, of course, we represent property owners in various subdivisions, other subdivisions regarding, you know, whatever questions they may have about, mm-hmm, what their neighbor's doing or what, you know, what,
sure,
control they have, or the board won't listen to them, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It might be.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're very well schooled on the law as it relates to this and deal with these issues pretty consistently and pretty often. You know, as we talked about last week, you know, we always go back to the governing documents.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that so much on this program over the years when it relates to homeowners associations.
And two, you know, sets of them, right?
Yeah, you really look at the bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
And the bylaws really is a set of documents or a document that indicates things such as when you should have meetings, what a quorum is.
Mm-hmm.
Really just kind of the governance of the corporation itself, because this is really a non-profit corporation.
Right.
That's what it is. And then, you know, obviously the covenants, which is also referred to as the declarations or restrictions, is the document that's recorded in the chain of title before anyone, usually,
mm-hmm,
if it's done right,
right,
before anyone buys any property in the subdivision, meaning any individual buyer buys from the developer, so that the property owner would then be subject to those restrictions, such as, you know, how big your house can be or how small your house can be.
Right,
and
right,
maybe some setback issues in there could be issues about, you know, fences, architectural control committees. How long can you park the boat trailer in the driveway?
Mm-hmm. Those are all in the covenants.
Those
usually
are all
yes,
in the covenants, right? So, you know, those are basically the documents we look at. Sometimes you have to get back to the articles of incorporation,
mm-hmm,
but very rarely when dealing with these issues.
And excuse me, Wes.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the interesting ones that we see every now and then is where the board of directors, you know, vote and pass a set of rules and regulations.
Yes, right.
That's, you know, that's always an intriguing one. You know, just they set forth, you know, two or three pages of just rules and regulations, and then the question evolves, you know, is this really enforceable on me? Am I really required to do these things?
Rules about, like, use of the pool.
Correct.
Right.
The common
right
areas.
Noise.
Correct.
Right.
You know, many, many different. Okay, it can also involve such things as Wes just mentioned, you know, how long you can park the boat in the trailer,
right,
in the side yard.
Right.
You know, some of these restrictive covenants don't sometimes go into the detail that the current board thinks would be in the best interest of the corporation.
But then there's the rub, right?
And so then they pass rules and regulations, and then there you have the rub.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually when we're talking about rules and regulations, we're dealing with issues regarding the common area, like,
mm-hmm,
parking on the street, like use of the pool,
mm-hmm,
you know, like you said, use of the other common areas, tennis court, you know, these type things.
There was a news, mm-hmm, event that happened a few weeks ago, mm-hmm, where there was police were called in. There were too many people at the pool. There were people that were climbing over the fence and
right,
all this kind of stuff, and they go on. And it came down to the foundation of why could the police be called, because apparently these were against the rules of the pool.
Yeah, and I think there was a racial aspect to that,
well,
too, from what I recall.
One, yes.
Yeah, and that's why we heard about, yeah, it on the national news.
That's right.
But nevertheless, yeah. yeah, we deal with these issues too, you know, because these rules get imposed sometimes by the board of directors or maybe a committee, a rules committee.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the committee may overstep their bounds a little bit. The committee really shouldn't get into issues such as issues dealing with the personal lots, the actual owner's lots, such mm-hmm. as, I mean, they can't just impose a rule summarily upon everyone as to what, for example, what size house you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these
not,
kind
not
of
the
things.
The covenants can, but not
the covenants can. So.
Yes.
So where do we go with that if we're in a situation where we've got a serious, let's say, issue in our subdivision with trailers or RVs or whatever being parked in the driveway and there's nothing in the covenants about that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the association board of directors really doesn't have the right to go just kind of self-impose or impose a restriction without the involvement of the property owners. Such as that. So what we have to do is look at the covenants to determine what is required to amend those covenants.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you'll have language in the covenants, normally toward the back of the covenants regarding amendment, one of the back pages, and it would indicate, you know, you need 75% of the owners to vote, or you need two-thirds.
Mm-hmm.
If we're lucky,
it's
maybe 50%.
Kind of,
well, it just depends on, you know, what the document says.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. So then, you know, you have to go through a formal process of actually having a meeting, giving folks the opportunity to vote, maybe sending out proxies,
mm-hmm.
maybe sending out absentee ballots, you know, those kind of things. So we're following what the bylaws then tell us to do as far as having this meeting. And then in the event that there is, you know, an affirmative vote.
Can you have proxies? Can you have absentees?
Yeah.
All those things set up.
Yeah.
Something in the bylaws. Then.
Oh, yeah, you can. You just have to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always done right. But nevertheless, you know, then we get into, you know, the actual meeting itself and the amendment of the covenants. And if the amendment passes because we get the percentage, then fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we now have a amendment to the covenants that then goes on record, and we're subject to that as well, all the property owners.
One of the areas I know that comes up in litigation before is like an architectural review committee.
Right.
And maybe you have, and because it's an area that has people change and people move in and out.
Right.
So
right.
Those committees change. Sometimes they want to enforce them, sometimes they don't.
We get that question all the time
where,
you know, the property owner moves in and they think, well, I know I can have this fence like this guy and like that guy and like this guy and like that guy and the property owners because they all have a fence. Like
right,
that.
Right.
Well, maybe this current board doesn't think that such a fence should be allowed, or maybe the covenants specifically say that such a fence should not be allowed, but these other fences have been there for 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, the statute of limitations on improvements on real property in a subdivision, and let's say that a fence is put mm-hmm. up and it's there for 6 or 7 years. Well, the board can't come back after 6 years and do anything about it. If it's been there and been open and been obvious,
mm-hmm.
typically the statute of limitations is 6 years. So this, you know, property owner who may think that he can have this fence, and then the board says, no, you can't have your fence, doesn't understand why his neighbor has the fence.
Yes,
and the reason
right.
why is because, you know,
they got
we
away
have
with
attrition
it.
And we have turnover. He got away with it. The old board maybe didn't care about it.
Mm-hmm.
But this one really can't do anything about it because the statute is already run.
Well, and conversely, a new board coming in that wants to enforce covenants can't necessarily go back again if some are too old.
Well, they can, as long as they're within the statute of limitations.
That's what I'm saying. If they've been around
right.
for that long,
if they're within the statute of limitations, but most boards, obviously, you know, there's a certain level of reasonableness. You know, do we want to be the new board that's
right.
going to come in and police everything that's been there forever? Most boards don't want to go through that process.
And the cost-benefit analysis, too. I mean, how much is it going to cost them to enforce that?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So.
But if we do have a situation where, you know, maybe there is a breach of the covenants.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is the fence that got put up without approval. Or maybe there's the outbuilding that got put up without approval. Or maybe the... the house got painted hot pink and that's not allowed, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. Then I think we were talking about this last week. The Planned Community Act really dictates, and that's under North Carolina General Statute 47F, it dictates the procedure that the board may take in order to correct that issue, because we can't obviously go on the property and repaint the person's house.
Right.
We can't tear down the fence, you know, those type things. So what you have to do is, you know, put them on notice, the property owner, that they're in breach of the covenants, and give them an opportunity to be heard, to have a hearing, to come before the board, to put on evidence as to why they think they're in compliance right. with the covenants. And then the board of directors would then consider that. And in the event that they ultimately, after the hearing, decide that they are, in fact, in breach of the covenants, then they can impose a fine on the property owner of up to $100 per day. And that fine starts 5 days, no earlier than 5 days from that hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of a grace period built there right. into the statute where, you know, you have due process, you can be heard, we have to give you notice of it. Once we give you notice of our decision, then you really have 5 days to go correct the problem. And in the event you don't, then you may be subject to a $100 a day penalty.
Due process being a key clause there. Right. We'll come back in a moment. Of course, Mandy wouldn't live in a neighborhood that she couldn't paint a house hot pink.
Absolutely not.
That's right. Nope. So, we'll have more to come in a moment. If you'd like to call in, you can at 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. We're talking about a covenant and also neighborhood organizations and homeowners groups and all the rules and regulations. And Wes, most properties have covenants, even if they don't have a homeowners association, right?
Well, some do and some don't. I mean, you know, we certainly have subdivisions in Carteret County that I'm familiar with where they're not really a formal, you know, homeowners association mm-hmm. and really even a formal subdivision, but there were covenants that were put on record. Maybe the road is a state-owned road or...
Yeah, I live in one.
Right, so. But you still have some covenants that yeah. may be loosely followed. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, depends. Now, as it relates, Ben, to, you know, this issue of fining and restrictions in the covenants and mm-hmm. those type things, that really is a two-way street. I mean, most people think about it as, you know, I buy property in a subdivision and I'm restricted on what I can do in the subdivision. So there's uniformity. So all our mailboxes look the same. And
right.
so we don't have the hot pink house and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But you have to understand also it's really a two-way street in that the board of directors really has an obligation, an affirmative obligation to reasonably uphold and police those to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
They can't just pick and choose. They can't be random. Now, if we get into a situation where old board really didn't follow the rules so much as far as policing those or enforcing those covenants, mm-hmm. but a new board thinks or obviously that they should do that, which
right.
you know they really should because they have a duty to protect everyone's property rights.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, you know, who buys in the subdivision, you know, it should anticipate that these covenants should be reasonably enforced by the board. So, you know, that it's interesting that is a two-way street because you have to realize that a board that just decides, hey, we're just not going to enforce this very, let's say, objective standard. Fences can't be more than 4 feet and someone puts up a 5-foot fence. Well, that's clearly a breach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the board then brings upon itself some liability for not doing that. Because they do have normally a very well-defined affirmative duty in the bylaws and sometimes in the covenants to reasonably enforce those covenants. And I don't
right.
know what good argument there would be to just let a 5-foot fence go by, you know, if it the covenant state you can't have a fence over 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, you know, it's a little bit of a slippery slope there when we're dealing with, you know, property owners' rights and then the board's obligation, and then we're all volunteers here.
Right, right.
So, you know.
Well, on that liability issue, I mean, what would that liability what does that look like that they might hold, a property value liability?
Well, there would be potentially a claim by an individual property owner who is not happy with the board's failure to enforce for breach of fiduciary duty. And there could be a derivative action brought by the individual under 55A is a statute where the individual property owner could bring a derivative action against the corporation for the corporation's failure to perform. And in that derivative action statute, it allows for that individual property owner potentially to recover attorney's fees. So it could get to be a big brouhaha is
what I'm saying here.
It could end up being a kind of a drawn out lawsuit type situation that really no homeowners association wants to get involved in. So, you know, you've got to address that as a board in a reasonable way. You have to, you know, look at the circumstances, and, you know, there are sometimes situations where there might be like a variance given if it's a very specific situation, but not because you're good friends with the guy who wants the fence. That's not that doesn't need to be the reason why we're allowing the 5 foot fence when only 4 foot fences are allowed in the subdivision.
Ben, I think that it's important for Wes and I to say this in the last few minutes of the program, because we do deal with these questions and these conflicts often, and they can be extremely expensive for the homeowner and very, you know, psychologically emotional for the homeowner.
Yeah.
And so what I'm leading up to is that, you know, as a buyer, it is so important, and I just don't think this gets said enough, it is so important that you as a buyer really research your community that you're about to buy into, your subdivision, your condominium, whatever it happens to be. You know, what is the financial viability of the organization? What are the status of the assessments? And then, you know, what ask around, you know, what are the conflicts going on? You know, what is the board like right now? What is happening in this in this subdivision that I'm about to buy in? You know, what are some of the ghosts, you know, that are out there? This is very important, and I think it's something that doesn't get said a lot. I think that when it becomes really public, when there's like a lawsuit involved, then yes, it becomes all the subject of conversation. The realtors then engage in that. And the buyer is aware of that. There are several subdivisions that have been in litigation for quite some time over an issue or a condominium that has had a certain problem that is in litigation, and we kind of all know about it. But otherwise, these things don't get talked about, okay? I'm not sure that it's the first thing on the mind of the realtor that's listing the property. They want to sell the property, obviously. Nothing wrong with that with our realtor friends. But it's maybe something that's just not brought to the attention of the buyer through the real estate.
They may not get past whether or not there's any liens on the
property.
That's about it.
So, you know, it's an important thing to put on your list when you're a buyer.
Okay, well, there's more to come in a moment with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And thanks for joining us for Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And as always, you can go to harvellandcollins.com to find out more information there and listen to past shows, too. And we're talking about homeowners associations.
Yeah, we've got a couple minutes left, I think. So, you know, one other issue that we deal with pretty often, Ben, is regarding the very subjective opinion type authority that's given to architectural control committees sometimes. It's pretty common to have language in covenants that indicates that the architectural control committee has the authority to make a decision as to whether your house plans will be approved or the fence you're going to put up, whether that should be approved, or whether the deck you're going to build on the back of your house should be approved. But then there's no specific potentially language in the covenants about what the standard
would be.
Exactly.
What should it look like?
Very common. Yeah. Now, why is that language common? Mm-hmm. Well, it's common because you can't address every scenario in covenants. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes you may be able to put square foot limitations regarding the size of the deck and these type of things. Mm-hmm. But the general catch-all language in covenants regarding an architectural control committee's authority is pretty common. And there's nothing wrong with that type of language being in the covenants. However, sometimes homeowners associations get confused about what their rights are. That is not a rubber stamp or just carte blanche authority to decide summarily what or what cannot be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
What has to happen is that in the event that the association through its architectural control committee determines that, let's say, that deck on the back of the house is not going to be allowed,
mm-hmm.
they have to show that there's a common scheme or plan in the subdivision as it relates to the type of decks that we expect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Right.
And if there's a common scheme or plan, meaning in most of the houses with decks, this is the type of deck that we have within general, and what you're proposing is just a monstrosity.
Yes.
It doesn't
right.
fit within that at
right.
all.
Right.
They have to make that determination. The law on that is very clear. We have some good case law in North Carolina dealing with those kind of issues. So the association would have to act reasonably
mm-hmm.
in enforcing that type of very broad, subjective type standard, and they would also have to show, if they're brought to task, so let's mm-hmm. say in court, that there was a common scheme or plan as it relates to that. Same as it relates to the type of house you want to build, type of house plans,
mm-hmm.
Fences, outbuildings, garages, these type of things.
Yeah, I think there was a case not too long ago of somebody wanted to build a deck on top of their house so they
right.
could see the water, So
right, that's right. That would, we may get into issues there with regard to the building inspector
mm-hmm.
and issues with regard to the covenants and issues with regard to the architectural control committee. Absolutely. So mm-hmm. there would be potentially several hoops to jump through with that type of thing unless it's common
right.
in the subdivision. If everyone has one,
right.
then you're usually good to go
mm-hmm.
unless the covenants indicate for some reason that they're not allowed.
Again, just in right. summary there, the covenants and the bylaws
right.
can sometimes be competing documents. That's where
sometimes, yeah.
that's where the rub may
a little
be.
Confusion sometimes, yeah. right.
But being involved in your homeowners association is one of the ways to be on the right side of that.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
There's no
because
question about it.
Government goes to those who show up, and that's one of those areas where...
That's exactly right. And, it's... We have to realize that with all of this technicality we're talking about, there mm-hmm. has to be injected into that reasonableness on mm-hmm. both sides of the coin, by the association and by the property owner, because we really are all volunteers,
mm-hmm.
usually just trying to do the best we can.
That's right.
So
find out more if you have homeowners issues. You want to give them a call at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. You can give them a call at 252-726-9050. Again, 252-726-9050. Online at harvellandcollins.com and 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.